Welcome back to the California Conversation. I'm Tess Abraham. If you live in California, politics can often feel like a completely one-sided affair. After all, we have a supermajority in our legislature. But in recent weeks, higher courts have dealt some significant legal blows to our state, from everything from gun rights to parental rights and even to immigration enforcement. And really, these decisions serve to show our state something that it has tried very hard to forget, and that is that the Constitution does still apply. Here. I am breaking it all down for you today and showing that this is proof that political tides can change even in the bluest state in our country. But before we get started, make sure to like this video, subscribe to this channel if you haven't already, and ring that notification bell so that you stay up to date on all things California politics. And if you want more information or you want sources cited in compiling today's episode, then you should check out the corresponding article on my website, which is linked below. All right, today is full of good news. We are focusing on legal wins, and we are going to talk about why they matter, how it will affect life in our state, and how they've tied into many different policies and laws that we have talked about here week to week. The first major court ruling that we are going to look at has to do with gun rights. And like I said, this is something that we have talked about so much on the show because California has one of the strictest regimes when it comes to being able to own a gun, what kind of gun you are able to own, where you can take it, who can carry it. And so the most recent court ruling centered all around this idea of concealed versus open carry. So just to set the scene, in California, it is illegal for you to carry a weapon around concealed if you do not have a permit. And to get a CCW, there are a few different steps you have to go through. Obviously, there's a whole application process, but you have to be 21 years old. You have to go through a background check. You have to get fingerprinted. There's a firearms training course you have to do. You have to do a live fire proficiency test. And you even have to meet some objective standards of living in good moral character. So that used to be more subjective. That was struck down. But there are objective standards now that you have to meet. So if you want to own a gun and if you want to be able to conceal that gun and take it with you to a store, to wherever, whatever event you are going to in order to protect yourself or those around you, you have to go through this very cumbersome process. And the problem is this process in California is not just, well, I apply, I meet the criteria, I get the permit, and now I can carry a gun. There are a few more inhibiting factors. The first is that California is a may issue state. And so that means that a CCW is not guaranteed to you even just because you meet the qualifications. The process can take years or at least several months to even go through. And so that means that your ability to get a CCW and carry your gun in our state varies so widely depending on what part of the state you live in. So if you live in a county that's a little bit more gun friendly, it might be easier for you. But if you live in an area that's more liberal and maybe more opposed to guns or has stricter gun control, then it's going to be harder for you to be able to get that CCW, even though the only difference is just location of where you live. On top of that, even if you have a permit, there are a lot of areas that are designated in California as sensitive areas. And so this means that there are areas where even if you are concealed carrying, you cannot bring your weapon. Think things like schools or parks or other areas, government buildings, I believe is one of them, and even restaurants where alcohol is served. And once you look at the list, it's a pretty long list of places you can't conceal carry a gun. You really start to question, where can I take this thing? Like, what's the purpose of getting a permit if I can't even take it if I know that I'm going out to dinner and I'm going to happen to be at a restaurant that I can't carry this into? And so really, it's not just that you have to go through the legal process to be able to carry a gun. It's also that California has really put such burdensome restrictions so that it makes it nearly impossible or just largely disincentivized from you wanting to go through that and have to learn all of the laws that you have to abide by. Now, the reason for this is because California has basically outlawed the ability for Californians to open carry. That's not even a thing here, that you can just carry your gun around wherever. It might happen in very small rural counties, but for the majority of California, I believe it's about 95% of the people who live in California live in areas where you are definitely not allowed to open carry, and it's a hard process to be able to concealed carry. And this is exactly what a higher court, it's a Ninth Circuit panel, ruled on earlier in January. And so on January 2nd, they announced that California's near statewide ban on open carry in counties with populations above 200,000. So that's where open carry is banned. Violates the Second Amendment. And they say this for a few different reasons. For one, Counties over 200,000, again, make up 95% of our state's population. So most people, 95% of people living in California live in places where open carry is banned. But in addition to that, they say that this is inconsistent with the Second Amendment because there is no historical tradition that justifies such a broad practice. And so when it comes to our right to bear arms, they say that there is no exception carved out for counties with larger populations. That has never happened. There's no legal precedent for that. Therefore, it is violating the Second Amendment of the Constitution. And it's really important to note here that the question being answered by California courts is not, is open carry a good or bad idea? You have to set that aside. You have to set aside your feelings about guns. You have to set aside whether you think open carry is effective or not. That's not the question they're answering. Courts are here to talk about the constitutionality of laws. And so the question that they are seeking to answer is, does a ban in California on basically everybody being able to carry guns because of the large numbers of populations in those counties, does a ban like that violate the Second Amendment? Or is there support in the Second Amendment or support in some legal precedent or some constitutional framework that says that a ban like that is allowed to be upheld? That's the question that they are seeking to answer. And that's the question that they have answered, basically saying, no, this is not constitutional. And so you cannot just put a blanket ban on it like this. Now, what does this mean for California gun owners? Pretty much there's no change. Obviously, this is going to be debated and contested. There is going to be more court challenges over this issue. And who knows, maybe it will make it up to the Supreme Court for a final ruling. The ruling that was passed down by the Ninth Circuit panel is not an order to be mandated. And so until it's mandated that counties allow for open carry, really nothing is going to change. But I still want us to be excited about this. I still think it's important for us to be aware of, because it's opening the door to a challenge. And these are laws in California that have been in place for decades at this point. These are laws that people have just taken for granted and assumed, well, this is just how life is here. And instead it's showing, no, when you get a second set of eyes on it and when you actually put it under constitutional review, this is questionable at best. And so something might need to be done about this. According to the court, if open carry is pretty much completely prohibited, and concealed carry is also very restricted and difficult to do, the state is effectively taking away people's rights to bear arms at all, because they are taking away all of the channels for people to be able to take their guns with them outside of their homes. And the Second Amendment does not only grant us the right to own a gun in our home, in a safe, locked up, just in case of a home intruder. It gives us the right to bear arms, which means the right to be able to take those places where we might feel more unsafe, places where we might have to defend ourselves or our families or the people who are with us. And so again, California has been taking away that ability for people. That means that California has been denying constitutional rights of its citizens. We should be absolutely thrilled for any review of policies that are taking away any rights that we should be guaranteed under our Constitution. We want more people looking at this, and we should not just be happy with the status quo. We shouldn't just accept, well, California is a really restrictive state. It shouldn't be that way. We should look at laws that we would say are not right. It's not right to restrict the rights of people that are guaranteed to them. And so this is a very encouraging example of federal courts, higher courts stepping in and saying, no, California, just because a law has been in place for a long time does not mean that it's going to stand if we can look at the actual legal implications of this and say, this is wrong. But gun rights are not the only rights that our courts are seeking to uphold or defend for those of us who are living in wonderful California, because there was another ruling a few weeks before that ruling on gun rights that speaks specifically to another very important topic, and that is parental rights. So if you remember, I have talked about AB 1955 on this show. I have a whole episode on it. If you haven't listened to that, you should go back and listen to it. Basically, Governor Newsom passed a bill in 2023 at this point, going into effect in 2024, that said that school districts could not mandate that teachers have to notify parents if their students or the parents' children at school start to identify as a different gender. So if a student shows up to school and says, my gender identity is changing, instead of a girl, I am now a boy, call me by these names and these pronouns, then a school could not say, well, it is the teacher's responsibility to now tell the parent that that is going on, because that is clearly something that's going on in the child's life and the parent has a right to know. Instead, California said that it will protect teachers who actually withhold that information from parents. And they did this in the name of child abuse. They said that teachers need to be able to have the flexibility to see whether or not it is safe for the child to tell their parents about their gender identity. And so that's the way that they are framing it. But essentially, again, it's protecting any teacher who just decides that a parent doesn't have a right to know. And so at the worst case, it also protects schools from programs or teachers to be able to indoctrinate children, to be able to tell them things about their gender identity, and then not tell the parents where that child is mentally, physically, emotionally, with all of the things that are going on. And so this clearly violates every fundamental belief that says that parents are the ones who raise their children. Parents are the ones who, at the end of the day, love their children the most, who know what is best for them, and that abuse cases are more rare and are more egregious, and those should be handled differently. But we cannot assume that every single parent is going to be committing child abuse against their child just because they may disagree with some of the choices that their child is making. Now, what happened is a federal court actually blocked the enforcement of this bill. And so school districts across California have been trying to enforce these sort of policies that say if a child comes to you confused about their gender or saying things about their name and pronouns, you need to tell the parent. But our state has sued districts like that, and our state has gone after districts to say under AB 1955, you cannot require that. And so a federal judge actually defended the school districts that want to put this type of notification law in place and said that you cannot enforce AB 1955. And I just want to read some of the ruling because the writing is phenomenal. The judge wrote, quote, California's public school system parental exclusion policies place a communication barrier between parents and teachers. The state defendants are, in essence, asking this court to limit and restrict a common sense and legally sound description by the United States Supreme Court of parental rights that this court will not do. Let's go. I love that. Finally, some common sense and decency when it comes to upholding good laws and then striking down bad laws and refusing to uphold them. And the judge is absolutely right. It is completely common sense. It is inherent to nature that parents are the ones who raise their children, that parents are the ones who know their children, and that you should not be putting a blocker between what teachers are telling parents about their own children. Teachers are not the ones who raise these kids. These kids don't belong to them. You might really enjoy your children if you are a teacher. You, of course, want their safety and well-being, but you are not their parent. And so you do not have the right to raise them in accordance with your values. The parent has a right to raise their child in accordance with their values. A few of the different constitutional precedents that he cited in his ruling were the 14th Amendment, which he says gives parents the right to care for and the right to make medical decisions for their children. That's a court precedent that has been upheld in other cases. He talks about the First Amendment, obviously, of parents having the right to train up their children in their sincerely held religious beliefs, and so schools cannot go against that. He also says that the law is completely overbroad, and it does not give any supporting evidence to show that it actually protects or benefits children. And so if you're going to pass an overbroad law, we've talked in the past that the standard is that it has to be, this is the only way that we can actually do what is right. So in this case, the only way that we can protect children is to say that teachers cannot notify parents when this happens. They have not proved that at all, and the burden of proof is on them. And then, of course, he hands power back to the parents, where the power should always be, because the parents are the parents of the children. So I don't know why we would ever take power away from them. Now, there's already pushback to this ruling, and so a federal appeals court blocked enforcement of the ruling that said that schools couldn't be punished or school districts couldn't be punished for breaking AB 1955. It's all confusing. It's just ruling on top of ruling. But essentially, they are saying that this ruling is not correct, that there are problems with it, and so it needs to be overturned. Governor Newsom said in his own podcast that he thinks that the ruling is going to be completely thrown out. So, of course, there's pushback. We would expect that in the same way that when California passes a crazy thing, they can expect pushback from conservatives. But we, again, can still be excited about this type of ruling because this builds momentum. It builds momentum to change, and it also empowers others to speak out when they agree with your common sense position. And one great example of that is that 2 weeks ago, the United States Department of Education actually wrapped up an investigation, or at least they shared some findings about an investigation into California's Department of Education. And they found similar rulings as to what the federal judge was finding about California standing in the way of parents having the rights to raise their own children. And so listen to this finding, quote, the California Department of Education egregiously abuses its authority by pressuring school officials to withhold information about students' so-called gender transitions from their parents. Under Gavin Newsom's failed leadership, school personnel have even bragged about facilitating gender transitions and shared strategies to target minors and conceal information about children from their own families. That's wild. And it is exactly what is happening here. This is calling out exactly what California's radical agenda is. It's pulling back the curtain from things that our own governor likes to try to hide or brush off as that couldn't possibly be what we're trying to do. Well, the actual United States government is saying this is what you're doing. And so that is all brought about by court rulings like this. And as a result, the federal government has vowed that it will be working to put steps in place to hold California accountable for their recklessness, as well as just for these terrible policies. So this is a really big win for parents, as well as for children in our state. And most recently, not only are we making headway on gun rights and on parental rights, which is just so exciting, we are also making headway on federal immigration enforcement. So if you recall, a bill that was just passed last year in 2025, set to go into effect this year, was about ICE officers not being able to wear masks as they carry out federal immigration enforcement. This comes after Democrat politicians have been continually referring to ICE as the Gestapo, as secret police. And so they say that you shouldn't be able to wear masks and hide your identity, and so we are going to unmask ICE. However, a court ruling just on Monday of this week struck that down. It said it was unenforceable for all of the reasons that you would guess, being one, the supremacy clause that says that states cannot control the federal government. So everyone saw that coming, that states cannot have mandates on federal government agencies. But even more than that, the judge also ruled to say that this was incredibly discriminatory because it's only calling out federal government agencies. And so it's not talking about state officials or state law enforcement either. It's just singling out ICE. And so essentially, it has been deemed completely unenforceable in our state, which is just great. It's just, again, another win for common sense because it does not make sense that California would defend rioters and looters who wear masks. They have all worn masks every time that riots break out, and they go and they set cars on fire, they break into small businesses, they loot things, and they're wearing masks. And California has said nothing about that. We haven't passed any bills that say you can't wear masks at a protest because you have to be proud of who you are and what you're doing, but then they just turn around and say that ICE has to not be able to wear masks when they are literally trying to hide their identities because they have been doxxed, harassed, threatened, and even, you know, threatened to be killed. So their very lives are at stake. Now, again, this is getting pushback. Already officials are coming out saying, well, we'll just file a new law that's not discriminatory against the federal government. We'll include all state government agencies, whatever. Okay, they want to continue to fight back. That is expected. But once again, we can take this as a victory, as a win to stop the enforcement of what is objectively a bad law. Now, all of this might sound great. You might be like, this is wonderful. There are actually some common sense legal rulings that are being passed down. However, it doesn't really change life today. Nothing substantially is changing. More court battles are just going to be drawn out, and so things could be overturned and flip-flopped once again. So why should I care? Why should we be talking about this? Why should we take this as encouraging? And I hope that when we hear about court rulings like this, our first thought is to really understand firsthand, this is an example that shows us politics really matter. Your engagement in politics, my engagement in politics, our understanding and being informed of what's going on and our pushing back and resistance against the laws that are passed that are bad in our state actually matters and makes a difference. And I know that in California, it's really hard to feel that way because we are so insulated. We talked about this last week, where as soon as the federal government starts to pass down new health policies, that California just starts to insulate itself away. It starts to protect its own laws and policies. It starts to say, we're going to be opposite of the federal government. And so we are not going to let their guidance influence our decisions. And so you can start to think, even if the federal government starts to do something that I agree with, what hope do I have here in a state that is completely opposed to my federal government? And then you look around yourself in your own state and you start to think, well, we have a supermajority here. Most of the voters have continually voted for the Democratic Party. And so again, what can I really do? Why does it really matter? But instead of giving in to a sort of fatalism or defeatism, we have to continue calling out the authoritarianism. We have to continue calling out the foolishness. We have to continue calling out objectively wrong laws and policies that are going to hurt people because they cause a ripple effect that starts to initiate the sort of change that we're seeing across our state. The reason that these rulings on California gun laws, on parental rights, and on immigration enforcement are coming down now is because judges are moving back to applying an actually constitutional framework. And that constitutional framework is what we as conservatives are trying to defend and uphold. Being a conservative does not mean that we seek to win every sort of policy battle. It doesn't mean that we seek to win every single election. What we seek to do is try to conserve what we know is right. We try to conserve the principles and the freedoms and the protections that our founding fathers set out for us way back when America was founded. We seek to preserve those because we believe in the power of limited government, because we have seen firsthand how that is a fundamental good. We believe in the freedoms that they wrote for us in the Constitution and in the Bill of Rights. We believe in the First Amendment that protects free speech and freedom of religion. We believe in the Second Amendment that protects our right to bear arms. We believe in all of the constitutional amendments that work together to say that parents have the right to raise their own child. We believe in all of these things. And so we fight not just to win in the political sphere, we fight to conserve what we know is actually good for the communities around us and for the country. And so this is why you vote. This is why you vote even when it feels hopeless. This is why you vote when you feel powerless. This is why you vote when you feel like, well, even if we get a good president in power, our own governor disagrees with him. And so how much will it really affect change? It does affect change. There are still ways that our federal government is able to influence our state government. And there are still good judges on the bench who are willing to apply the Constitution in the way that it is meant to be applied, in a way that adheres to what it is actually saying, and not to let their politics get in the way to influence their rulings. And so this is more important than ever to talk about this year, because we have an election coming up and we are going to reject fatalism. We are not going to quit before we even get started. We are going to examine the candidates for governor. We are going to examine any sort of propositions that are on the ballot, and we are going to vote for who we think will be best to actually conserve and uphold those good, true, and biblical values that we know promote a flourishing society. Gun laws matter in our state because every person has the right under our Constitution to defend themselves and to bear arms. Parental rights matter because the state is not the parent and they are not the ones raising children. God has granted rights to parents to raise their children, and we must defend people's rights to freedom of speech and freedom of religion when it comes to raising their own families. Immigration rights matter because our government should be able to enforce laws in order to make our communities safer, and they should be able to do so without being threatened for their lives or have fear for their lives. They should be supported and empowered by our government, not having our government actually enable the people who are doing the harassing, the doxing, and the violence against them. All of these policies matter, not just because we get excited about politics or we like to debate or whatnot. All of these things matter because they affect real people. And again, they are what contribute to either the flourishing of society or the complete destruction of society. Get excited because big changes could be coming to our state. And regardless of what happens, regardless of the pushback that inevitably will happen, regardless of the fact that sometimes it just feels so hard, way too hard to actually make change here. Regardless of all of that, these are wins for truth. They are wins for justice, and they are worthy of being recognized, seen, and celebrated. We keep moving forward in faith. Faith that says that doing the right thing, albeit harder at times, is worth it. It is worth it for our children, for our neighbors, and for our souls. Thank you so much for joining me here today. I hope it was helpful for you as you navigate life in our state and that you even learned something new. If you love this show, please spread the word and share it with your friends, family, and fellow Californians. And I'll see you back here next week for another episode of the California Conversation.